This is Michael Kaiser, and you're listening to the Good Beer Hunting Podcast. Today's episode is part of a series of talks we recorded at the Beavertown Brewery Extravaganza, a massive 8,000-person anniversary party held over a couple of days in London, celebrating Beavertown Brewery. The folks from Beavertown invited Good Beer Hunting to host the symposium portion of the event. Knowing there were a number of leading voices in the industry that would be present in the same place, we took advantage to hash out some important ideas about the future of beer, both in the UK, the US, and around the world. These talks were hosted by myself and our UK editor, Matthew Curtis. This episode is called There Goes the Neighborhood, How Hyperlocal Changes Everything. I'm hosting this one alongside speakers Andrew Schwartz from Modern Times Beer, Lauren Lister from Beavertown Brewery, and Connor Casey from Cellarmaker Brewing Company. Listen in. All right, welcome back to the symposium. Thanks for joining us. Today, this talk is going to be, I believe we called it There Goes the Neighborhood, Hyperlocalism in Beer. And I've got three panelists today that can speak to that in very different ways. We've got, here to my left, Andrew Schwartz from Modern Times. We have Lauren Lister from Beavertown. Hyperlocal praise.
I'm making my team sit in so they can clap for me.
And then we've got Connor Casey from Cellarmaker in San Francisco. All right. So I want to jump right in, because I already cited this idea earlier based on something you had told me, I think, about 2 years ago now, when we were talking about what your plans were going to be next. You have a very small kit, 10 barrels-ish,
I think. 10 barrel, yeah.
Right there in San Francisco in the Soma neighborhood?
Soma neighborhood, yeah.
I asked you what was next. Are you going to move to a production facility? Because you were bursting at the seams there.
No.
Yeah, immediately said no. Why would I do that? I'm just going to do another one of these. Because if I did a production facility, I'd have to make 5 times the amount of beer to make the same amount of revenue. You were very keen in replicating the small sort of niche model you had there of the 10-barrel kit in a tasting room. Has that held true?
Yeah, totally. So we're a small brewery, 10-barrel system, like you mentioned. We do about 2,000 barrels a year-ish. We sell about 2/3 to the tasting room, 1/3 of it's distributed. We really like that balance because you're exposed out in the market, and at the same time, I think the beer tastes best when it's served off a bright tank, direct from that tank into a customer's pint. There's no oxygen, there's no travel, there's lots of control, and it just smells like it should and tastes like it should. We've stayed small. We're trying to do kind of expand horizontally these days and make more styles well that we haven't made before. Lagers, Belgian singles that are bottle conditioned, fun stuff for us.
What are you making Belgian singles for? Who wants that?
I know, it sells really slow, but we're really proud of it. For ourselves. We want to stay small and do that. And realistically, I think you can do the multiple tasting room thing. To me, I feel like it would be hard to replicate the same culture if you have multiple tasting rooms, and it essentially you are a chain by definition at that point. That doesn't sound very attractive to me, and
Have you come up with a different word for it than chain?
It is what it is. I mean, I'm not into it. So that's, yeah. So for us, I guess we look at that and we say, let's keep it small. This is the perfect amount. And if we're just going to crank out a ton of distributed beer, the margin's so low that you're working 5x to make maybe twice as much money. And life work balance is a thing. I said it. Cool. Yeah.
Now that's certainly part of what you're saying is the constraints of the American market and the system that's in place there. Mm-hmm. I know here in the UK, Beavertown has expanded quite rapidly over the last 5 years, has brought on a lot more production. But how does that play out for you guys in terms of your local relevance and in sort of your hyper-local market?
When I'm in charge of sales and marketing, so when I came on, I think we were exporting 2 years ago to 25, 27 different countries, but people in London couldn't get our beer, and I just said, that, why? And I guess because as a young brewery, if someone calls and they're like, I'm from Singapore and I want your beer, your ego's like, yeah, oh my God, that's amazing. Exciting. But I think we've pulled back massively into the home market and driven more than half of our volume into the M25, which is the ring surrounding London. And I think we're better for it. I think we still have limited beer. We're making more, but it's still not even close to enough to satisfy. There are still accounts in London that can't get our beer. So I think we're doing the best that we can and we're making what we can. And again, by having most of it go into our backyard, I think you just give the love where you should.
Yeah.
Hometown.
And Andrew, I know you guys are in a unique position with Modern Times right now in sort of your company's growth, where you're starting to look at new markets in a much more specific way. Portland being the newest announcement that you're going to take over the space occupied by the Commons. And one of the ways in which you guys described why that was interesting to you was because of your relationship with that market already. How does that play into, I guess, the idea of, hyper-local versus regional and how you guys connect the two?
Well, I think a lot of the definitions of all those words are changing, and it's hard to say what a regional brewery is, but one thing that we've talked about at Modern Times for a long time, and something that's changed since the very beginning, has been about serving the population that is closest to the production facilities and versus like, you know, expanding. So yes, we expanded quite a bit quickly, but every time we did that, we, you know, kind of built into those markets. So we would allow them to have all the beers that were available at that time to distribution and then grow from there. So meeting the demand that was in those markets. But the idea of Portland is really interesting to us because it means that we're going to, the idea next year is to make all of the draft component for all of the Pacific Northwest at Portland. So it should be a regional brewery for Portland. And that's a kind of localization in a sense. And then down the road from that is brewing, you know, specific beers for that market and specific beers for the Southern California market. So things start to differentiate from there and the two facilities.
So more malt in the IPA in Portland. Is that the is that what you're talking about?
That's good. No, yeah, we're gonna do all Pacific Northwest IPA, Cascade hops. We got a big contract. Okay. So anyway, so the PNW or the Pacific Northwest market, doing stuff, you know, down the road, maybe being that market or that facility becomes quite different than the Southern California facility and what they're brewing. The idea was to never, you know, from the earliest time that we ever talked about expansion, we always said we're not going to build the massive 100 barrel or 200 barrel brew house thing and just do it in Mira Mesa, which is like, you know, where Ballast Point is and stuff like that, and build these massive facilities and do something that's like more city specific and market specific. We're a complicated model, I think. We're also opening a brew pub in LA and down the road Anaheim, and hyper-localization takes on a different definition for us, but I think the Portland thing should really be a fleshing out of this idea of being like regional in different markets. Can we do that and be unique in that way?
Lauren, when you think about the future for Beavertown, do you find yourselves thinking in terms of hospitality? Or tap rooms or pubs or things like that?
Yeah, I mean, Beavertown started at Duke's Brew and Q, so I think that's kind of our roots. That's where we started. So I think Logan wants to open a couple bespoke bars in London that give you the Beavertown experience. The problem is it's effing hard to open a bar in London, or it's expensive. So we're just... we're trying to find the right place, take our time. So hopefully soon. Maybe, you know, he's from the Midlands, so maybe one in the Midlands, but nothing that's nothing more than a handful, but really bespoke, special places.
Well, a handful sounds scary enough. I don't know.
We'll start with the first one and see how that goes. I think that will be enough for us, but yeah, but not a lot.
Connor, when you hear people talking about opening up tap rooms in other cities, does that seem relevant to you? Does that seem foreign to you? Anytime I've talked to you, it seems like it was always very much about San Francisco specifically.
Well, I echo everything that these guys have said about keeping it local, and I think the brewery is obviously going to take better care of the beer than anyone else because it's their pride and joy. So I think that there's something beautiful about that, and I encourage that. I mean, it's kind of the same way you always go to the brewery and you trust you're going to have the freshest beer there. If it's a brewery-owned bar, there's a lot of trust there as well. And they keep the same tap list because they know if their tap list is different from the main one, people are going to catch on that, you know, there's older beers or whatever. So that control aspect's awesome. Our mentality has always been like, we're responsible for the pint like all the way until it gets into the consumer's hands, it should taste the way that we want it to taste and not just like ship it off and be like, well, we did our job, we're done, end of the day, done.
Yeah.
So I think that those, you know, that model works with that, you know.
Well, why come all the way to London to pour your beer?
Because it's fun. Like, yeah.
Does it have any effect or connection back to what you're doing in San Francisco in your mind?
Beer tourism is a very real thing in 2017. I was amazed by the amount of people that were like, I've been to your pub, and I'm like, cool, we're really tiny. So
yeah.
To me, that's like flattering. It's awesome. It's exciting. But a lot of, I mean, people in the Bay Area travel so much during the summer that there's almost this mass exodus every weekend, and it's mostly new customers, and our numbers show us that. It's like, whoa, this big flip and all.
Do you track a little bit like geographically where
people
are
coming from?
The POS
just says if it's new customers or old customers. In the winter, it's a lot of locals, and all of a sudden that 60-40 flips, and it's out-of-towners, and we're totally into that. They're excited in a different way. They haven't heard the story. They haven't had certain beers. It's a new level of excitement, you know, instead of your regulars, and we love them too, but you know, it's cool. It keeps it interesting.
Yeah, Andrew, how do you guys think about so what he's describing essentially is a destination brewery. People, they have to come to you to get the beer, and if that becomes sort of a part of their tourism experience, do you guys think about where the line is between being too available in the market versus being a destination and how that relates to the brand?
It's changing, you know. I think that Modern Times has always been about being available to people. That was something that in the very beginning, it was like, hey, we're gonna make these styles that are kind of inspired by other breweries and other beers that we've had and flavors that we enjoy, you know, and making them available to people. I mean, a Saison in a can, you know, for a while that one hasn't exactly caught on the way we wanted it to, but having like a DuPont in a can was kind of the idea, you know, in a similar way, in a kind of way. But so having those certain things available, like just as much as you want them, has always been part of Modern Times. But in terms of the destination, I think our tasting rooms and tap room and breweries will absolutely be a destination. You can tell by the brewery in San Diego, the post-it notes and the cafe and all the stuff. It has a sense of place that we want to make unique at each place. So when we have an LA brew pub and San Diego, we want to be able you to be able to go to both in a couple days and enjoy both and have unique experiences at them. I think that's something that Modern Times can definitely do.
So Lauren, I know one of the reasons why we're having this party in this space this year is, if I could phrase it this way, you perhaps underestimated the amount of reach you have in your hyper local market for the prior celebrations, where I think you pretty much got overrun with interest.
We didn't realize that many people liked us. I mean, yeah. We would be happy. We're used to throwing parties, you know, where 500 people would show up, and yeah. I think we were a bit naive with that specific party, and you know, we tried to really learn from that. But yeah, that was kind of a turning point for us, where we go, okay, people are traveling to come and see us. This is turning into something else.
I mean, I've met people from all over the world here for this today, and this is what brought them to London.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's humbling. For us, you know, we put together our dream list of breweries, and we said, if we're lucky enough that half say yes, then it's going to be amazing. And everyone that we invited said yes, and we were just bowled over. So I think it's amazing that they would come. But it's people travel. It's not just us. It's a credit to the lineup. I mean, people are getting to try world-class beers, and a lot of them they haven't been able to try before. So I think it's another turning point for the UK craft beer drinker to have access to these beers, and it's really exciting. And hopefully we can keep on doing it.
There's an interesting sort of dichotomy there, I feel like, of our interests are very much in the hyper-local, right? Like, that's where you succeed best, that's where your customers are. If something becomes too available, it almost starts to lose its luster a bit and lack of discovery for some folks. At the same time, we want access to these things from the other side of the globe because we're so, you know, they're so sought after or they're hard to get a hold of. I know I met you the other night at a bottle shop right here in London leading a tasting of your beers and had a tap takeover. I mean, that's about as far as an American brewery can get from London, being from San Diego. How do we rationalize this weird sort of gap between hyper-local and being sort of globally sought after? It's a weird spectrum to try and have to balance as a small brewer.
I think I was thinking the same thing when we're talking about hyper-local panel and talking about this festival is, how does this play into hyper-local or whatever? You know, I think people always want to try something different. I think one thing that we've seen from the festivals that we do is we bring these brewers in, and it's a great place for San Diego beer drinkers or London beer drinkers in this case to try different stuff, and then for the brewers of that place to take what they've learned and be better and make better beer and step up their game to the next level. I think that's a big part of it. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes into, I think, the world market of beer. But for us, doing that tasting that you saw, I've done tastings in different places. I've done tastings even in Oregon, where some of the beer was not quite fit for, you know, what we wanted. You know, it's unfortunate and part of distribution, but we airship beer here, and every beer tasted amazing. It was outstanding, and people tasted it.
It's the freshest I've had it outside the brewery.
It was really well done, and that's like a credit to Beavertown for being like, you know, we're gonna airship beer out here, and the market in London that's maturing and being like, we will pay for your beer to come out. Yeah. So that's the form of like global market that I want to be a part of, is not just like shipping beer out and then, you know, it gets out there eventually, and then you come out 3 months later and try the beer. It's air shipped out. We're coming out for a fest, and we're doing tastings that the next week. We had a beer that was tasted then that was packaged last week, which is really cool.
I mean, as a brewery owner, Connor, like, how important is it to you when thinking about your own portfolio that you do have access to these beers from around the world in their best possible state from time to time? I mean, you don't always get them that way, but when you do, like, how impactful is that on the future of what
you make?
It's
awesome. I mean, you're tasting the real deal. Yeah. If you're tasting an IPA that's a year old, we can all agree that it's just not the same thing. So it's not the way the brewer tasted. So that's a big deal. Logistics become a part of it, you know? So that was part of the invite to this fest. You know, I saw the word air freight, and I was like, dang, like, we're in. You know, temperature control, that's awesome. Part of our profile at home is...
These are the buzzwords for brewery owners right now.
I mean...
It's not dank, it's
secret's out, yeah.
Dank's out, now it's juicy.
Pilsner.
Maybe juicy's kind of fading out, I don't know what's next.
Cold pills.
But now it's air freight.
Yeah, air freight. Air freight IPA.
Air freight IPA. Yeah. That's going to happen now. Yeah, I mean, it's... How do you think it'll change the London scene with, you know, 8,000 people over a weekend having access to all of these beers? Is it, I mean, I would almost be afraid if I were a local brewery here that the expectations just went through the roof on what the, yep, what the drinker's gonna be looking for.
Yeah, but I think that's the only way that breweries like us are gonna get better. I think, you know, feedback from the customers of what they want. We need to be making the best beer that we can. We can't be complacent. And I think that, you know, we've been walking around tasting a lot of these beers, getting a lot of ideas, getting inspired. We had a lot of collabs before, and I think we just use this as a learning experience and as a chance to better ourselves, because the customer should expect more, and hopefully we can provide that.
Yeah, honestly, the number of collaborations that might have occurred this week might have raised the bar for all English breweries.
I got an email.
The education level.
I got an email at 5:30 this morning from Logan saying, I've just had an idea. We should do a after party with all of the collaborations. And he sent it to Sam and Kieran, who are like heading this up. I'm like, Logan, that could have waited until next week. These guys are going to jump off a bridge.
We have an audience member trying to take
Watch
credit for that idea. let's turn it over to first some Q&A from the group here. Does anybody have a particular question about hyperlocalism?
Hello. Andrew, you guys have got a coffee brand, almost like a brand on its own. How has having that helped you with your move to LA or Portland, being able to push out more than just the beer?
I don't know if it's helped at all, honestly. it's been a co-growth. So it's also, it's like working... It's another craft product, the way we make it and the people that work on it. So the people that work on our coffee are not brewers that do the coffee roasting and the coffee production of cold brew. They are people that are like are similar to us but interested in coffee. So it's really cool to have the creative conversations amongst ourselves and kind of like collaborate internally in a way, because as much as like we're in the same roof, they're doing a different thing 8 hours a day than we are. In terms of growth, the beer has been the major part of the growth, and the coffee's kind of come along with that. We might see that change down the road, but the coffee has come a long way since we first started. And
I remember walking in and meeting Jacob for the first time, and he was talking about how they can barely keep up with demand for the coffee. I was like, really? And we went in the back, and his girlfriend was roasting 1 pound at a time on a bar stool.
It's like, that's right.
It makes sense now, Jacob. It makes sense.
When you make 1 pound at a time, it's hard to keep up with the demand. It's like, yeah, if you made a barrel of beer at a time. But no, it's the same thing. But now we have a larger roaster, and now we're finally kind of hitting the roof of that. Probably about 3 months ago, we're getting in trouble with the amount that we had to make. But through cold brew production as well. So, yeah.
That's great. Any other questions? Over here in the green shirt.
When talking about hyperlocalization, how much does the environment concern you in terms of shipping your beer around the country and things like that? I mean, does it come into your thoughts in terms of worrying about it and things like that? Or is it part of you can't exist as a brewery without shipping your beer and expanding the reach of it?
It's a great question. It's essentially rooted in sustainability. I mean, you're shipping water and glass all over the country typically. In the traditional model of production and distribution breweries, but hyper-localization has cut so much of that out. Most of the time you don't have to package it at all because you're serving it over your own bar. But then contrasting, of course, with air shipping a fresh keg to London.
It's not very green.
I would actually say that I'm extremely torn on the matter, because you have certain brewery collectives that are happening these days where, you know, everyone's kind of under this umbrella. So all of a sudden there's a brewery, say, in Florida that's brewing a Colorado Breweries beer, brewing a Florida Breweries beer. I associate that Colorado brewery as being made with Colorado water, but all of a sudden we're cutting out on fossil fuels because we're shipping them so much less. So, should the Colorado beer have Colorado water, or do we love that we're helping the planet? I don't know. I mean, something to think about. I don't know.
Some different pros and cons.
Yeah, I don't know what's better, really. Yeah.
Well, I mean, considering even Pilsner Urquell treats its water now, I don't know if that really matters anymore.
Yeah.
Everybody's ROing it anyway.
That's a big part of Portland and any other regional thing that we want to grow to is something that we've talked about a lot, is like that will save money, but also fossil fuels and all that stuff on shipping to the Pacific Northwest for that Oregon facility. The Oregon facility is now distributing, what was hundreds of miles away from Southern California. Is now like a local producer of that beer. And it's theoretically the same product. I think that's a big, it's if it's not a big deal now, it's going to become one. And not everything we do is we're able to afford doing like what Sierra Nevada does with like all their water treatment and everything. But I think that it's something that people are going to have to pay attention to at some point.
Yeah, great question. One more, over here. She's very excited.
Hi. Oh, sorry.
Hi.
I'm curious how you take advantage of having a strong local market when it comes to getting feedback from the local drinker.
Feedback from local drinkers. How does that play into who you are, how you produce? Do you take local feedback more personally than you do feedback from halfway across the country?
All feedback's important.
Yeah.
I think if you have a tasting room or a pub, I mean, that's awesome. You're getting to connect with customers one-on-one all the time. And I know when we put on a beer that's a little different or outside of the comfort zone, you know, like we open right at 3 o'clock and I'm kind of sitting at the bar, like watching people. I might chat with them a little bit, you know, not, you know, invade their space, but, you know, hey, you just feel it out a little bit. I mean, you know, I don't ever really look at Untappd, but if we put out something that's really weird, I'm going to see what people are saying. Because sometimes what I think is amazing is totally in a different, you know, for other people and vice versa.
Belgian singles.
Belgian singles, man, bottle condition.
Okay, the Belgian single's not the craziest thing. Manhattan barrel aged style.
You got to do it all, right?
Yeah.
So, that's
my thoughts.
I feel like that's a bit of a loaded question because Camilla is our social media manager, so she...
Oh, it was a leading question.
I think she's just fishing for compliments. No, she gets a lot of our feedback, and we talk about the positive and the negative, and we try to be... We try to remove ourselves from the negative and say, okay, are they actually calling us out on something worthwhile? And if we feel like it is, then we roundtable it and see how we can get better. But I think it's... we're super open to feedback.
That's a great point, though, is having to figure out where the feedback is coming from and what its intent is not always clear. You can't just take everything for what it's worth. Like, it becomes a noisy bit of information.
Yeah, and the loudest voices aren't always the ones that you should be listening to.
Right.
They're not the majority. I mean, that's something with the growth of our tasting room that we've seen. Or, I mean, if Connor can kind of, like, have a few locals that he knows and trusts and everything like that, we kind of start to lose that with the tasting room growing so much. There's regulars, but you don't really have the opportunity to interface with them as much as you get a busier tasting room.
Right. Great. Thank you very much for your questions, and thank you for joining us today.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, folks. If you'd like to hear more from this series, there are nearly a dozen talks published on Good Beer Hunting right now, all about a half an hour in length. They also should download one at a time into your iTunes library. If you'd like to support GBH, please join our Fervent Few subscriber community at patreon.com/goodbeerhunting. And join us next year at the Beavertown Extravaganza. Dates for that are sure to be announced soon. We plan to make next year's symposium even bigger and better. Aim true, poor liberal folks. Have a great week.